Last week, Day to Day interviewed an American journalist, Philip Robertson, a writer for Salon.com, who was in Najaf and actually inside the shrine of Imam Ali when we spoke by satellite phone. He told us then that he couldn't get out. It was too dangerous. He did get out a day later. He's in Baghdad now. I spoke with him again earlier about being in the shrine and who is there and why. And we begin that conversation with the story of how one of the militias, they call themselves the Mahdi Army, how one of their guides led Philip and a photographer through U.S. lines and across a no man's land for a few hundred yards.
Somewhere in between the American lines and the Al-Mahdi lines, in a sort of an extremely dangerous no man's land, the snipers were the most dangerous aspect of crossing that boundary into the old city. And we nearly lost our lives doing it. Had I known how dangerous it was, I don't think we would have gone. I really don't.
So when you got inside the shrine of Imam Ali, what did you find?
I found a very interesting scene. The moment we crossed through the gates, and the gates are these enormous arches, it's a very dramatic, moving building, we walked in and we saw the high walls with the blue mosaics, and I noticed that the shrine was filled with hundreds of people, but none of them were armed.
These were militias, though. These were the fighters for Muqtada al-Sadr. Where were their weapons?
Their weapons were outside. Weapons are not allowed inside the mosque. Of course, most of those people were men. There are very few women in the mosque. But we found a very calm environment and what appeared to be a demilitarized one. It looked like the mosque was being used as a place of refuge.
Did you see Muqtada al-Sadr?
No, I did not. And I also did not ask about his whereabouts, because that's a very tough question to ask. His location is a closely guarded secret. But I didn't get the feeling he was in the mosque. If he was, it is vast. He could have been squirreled away in there. That's a possibility. But I don't believe he was there, because the men would have acted much differently had they known.
Now, this is a time when the U.S. forces are preparing to attack. There were indications that there might be an attack really at any moment, and then these attacks would seemingly be put on hold. But you're there inside the shrine and the mosque for a period of more than a day, almost 2 days. And during that time, how are people carrying on? What are they saying to you, and what are you saying to them?
Well, we were in the mosque for a total of about 3 days, and the mood was largely calm. In fact, normal mosque and shrine functions carried on as usual. Prayer occurred at the proper times. The Quran was sung. But there were also spontaneous demonstrations of fervor, religious fervor. The day before we left, we saw men sort of collect in a crowd, and they had believed that there was a vision of Ali or the Mahdi. There was a religious vision. And the men rushed to the end of the mosque and kept pointing at an empty gallery, saying that the Mahdi had appeared, that the disappeared 12th Imam had appeared. It was a religious vision. And so there were things like that going on as well.
What did these militias seem to be doing? They are waiting for direction from Muqtada al-Sadr or his deputies or what? I mean, what are they doing there in the shrine?
They're doing a number of different things, depending on what time of day it was, and depending what was happening outside. The Al-Mahdi Army is as best I can tell, a very disciplined guerrilla army. It's not the ragtag bunch that many people have portrayed them as. I really had great respect for their discipline and their bravery, especially in the face of such superior technology.
This figure of their leader, Muqtada al-Sadr, he remains mysterious to those of us in this country who get pretty vague reports of him. How did they see Muqtada al-Sadr?
The vast majority of the people in the mosque view Muqtada al-Sadr as little short of a god. I mean, they view him in extremely sort of overblown terms. He doesn't appear very much. They refer to him as the lion of God, which is also an appellation for Imam Ali. So they respond to him in a very religious, emotional way. It's adulation. I've never seen anything like it.
Did you get the idea that, in fact, Muqtada al-Sadr is in charge and running everything, or were there other forces there in the shrine that, you sensed were in control or trying to be in control?
I think that there are other. There's a very close circle that controls the al-Mahdi army, and I believe that Sheikh Ali Smaysam, a man in his mid-40s, represents a great deal of the power of the organization. I think he provides intellectual direction for the al-Mahdi army and its strategic sort of long-term thinking. He's a very well-educated man. He holds a university position in Kufa.
Sheikh Ali Smaysam, did you see him there?
Yes, I did. I saw him. He was a constant presence.
During all this time while you're there, there are these discussions going on. The interim government in Baghdad sends a peace delegation down there, and it's sometimes various spokesmen for al-Sadr are saying, well, we're going to disarm and leave, and at other times we're not going to disarm and leave. How did you know what was going on?
I didn't have great faith in the peace negotiations, and those negotiations got a great deal of press. But when I saw the delegation arrive at the shrine, because I was present for that delegation, it seemed that the negotiations were not successful. They demanded to meet directly with Muqtada al-Sadr, and they were denied. The al-Mahdi army wanted the coalition forces to withdraw to their previous positions, but they never got that. And I never felt that the peace plan had gone into effect. We knew that because there was a tremendous amount of shelling and machine gun fire going on in Najaf while the peace negotiations were supposedly taking place.
What do you think is going to happen with Muqtada al-Sadr and this Mahdi army? What does the future hold for them?
It's difficult to say. I think that they will lose their base in Najaf because I think that they cannot prevent a U.S. military victory in that city. But they will retain a great deal of political support in Sadr City and in the Shia South. And come the elections in January, if the Mahdi army chooses to field candidates, there could be a stunning win for them.
You see Muqtada al-Sadr emerging as a really important political figure in Iraq if these elections are held in January.
Sheikh Ali Smaysam told me in an interview that he had great faith in the elections in January and that he was going to make sure that the al-Mahdi army would participate. He said, we will participate in these elections. They will be free and fair.
Philip, this was a dangerous place. How did you finally get out?
That's a great story. I got out in a convoy of other journalists. There were journalists who were desperate to get into the Medina and didn't know how to do it. Cale Alford, Rita Leissner, and Scott Baldiff organized a limited ceasefire and drove directly into the old city from the outskirts of Najaf, past American tanks, negotiated their way into the city, arrived, had a whirlwind press conference with Sheikh Ahmed Shaivani and Sheikh Ali Smaysam, stuck us in the cars and got us out. If that convoy hadn't materialized, there would have been something. I think there would have been something. But I'm very grateful to my colleagues. They did an extraordinary job. You know, they pulled off a great coup because they got in and they got a story and then they got us as well.
Maybe they saved your life.
It's entirely possible.
Philip, thank you for speaking with us again on Day to Day, and good luck.
It was my pleasure.
Philip Robertson is a writer for Salon.com, where you can see his dispatches and photos from inside the shrine of Imam Ali. We link to them at our site, npr.org. There are some restrictions at Salon.